Welcome to A Lunch with Biggie, a podcast about small business and creatives sharing their stories and inspiring you. My guest today says yes to adventure. He's a graphic artist for an NHL team, but he also played a mascot for a baseball and a hockey team, spent 18 months homeless while working in New York for an ad agency. Oh yeah, he also decided to join the Navy at age 39. What? And we haven't even talked about his other projects, the Muppet Project, X-Men, the Turtle Card product. Wait, we have so much to talk about. Please welcome the art director, designer, and artist, mostly known as Mojo Works, but to me, he's known as Scott Madrinsky. What's going on, Scott?
Biggie, thanks for having me. And I got to say, I'm pretty impressed. I don't think I sent you any sort of phonetic spelling of my last name. So you nailed it. Not a lot of people do that.
Well, I will also say I give props to your website because your website does have it written
that
way.
It is there. You're right.
Which is amazing. Right. Which is amazing to think about. Thank you so much for coming on, man. Mm-hmm. I've known you for a while, and we'll talk a little bit about the logistics of how we've met, the power of the internet. So I really appreciate you taking a lunch break with me. Obviously, my first question always is, what's your go-to like lunch or sandwich?
So I knew you were going to ask this question because I've been I only recently realized that this show was out there. So I've been catching up. I've been going like backwards from the most recent. So I've heard all of January. And I was ready for this question. And growing up in New Jersey, I worked at a deli throughout high school. I feel like I have a little bit of street cred in this world. And I'm also one of these people, when you step on my foot, my mouth opens. So I love food. And it's so hard to land on just one. So I'm going to cheat. I'm going to give you my favorite breakfast sandwich. Potato. And when I say potato, it's like that McDonald's style giant hash brown.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Potato, eggs, provolone cheese on a pumpernickel bagel.
Delicious. Okay. I love it. I love it. Very that is one of those things that I do. I do the hash brown inside. I do that. If I go to Wawa, that's usually what I do is I get the hash brown, throw it in there sizzly. It's always a go-to. That I love that. All right. So that's the breakfast. Give me a lunch.
Lunch is tough because like I said, I really love so many things, but I was trying to think to myself, if I was thrown into a diner or a deli right now, and obviously I'm only going to eat one thing, what's it going to be? It's probably going to be a pastrami Reuben.
Okay. I like it.
Delightful. And then I'm even going to throw out dessert. It's hard to beat a classic s'more.
Yes.
Graham cracker, melted chocolate, marshmallow, throw it on there.
Yeah. You can't go wrong. Now I'm glad you brought that up because I did see that I'm in my when I was doing my research and you said something to me, you said that there's a way to layer meats on a sandwich to make it better. And I want to know what it is.
There is. So you're slicing, you know, whatever, your boar's head, your whatever style meat it is. You've got your deli meat, you're just slicing it. And a lot of people I've seen, and they'll just kind of just drop it on the bread. And it just like, it ends up just being like another thick slab. That's not the way to do it. You have to kind of, I know this sounds like weird, you have to fluff it. And it essentially is just like almost if you were to like kind of crinkle your sheets or like a pillowcase and it's all kind of curled up like that, you do that and you do a few
like little bunches.
Yeah, little bunches all along, whatever. It's a long roll, a round roll, whatever it may be. And that, I don't know what it is, but it's true. It just, when you bite into it after the fact, there is a difference versus just laying down slabs of meat.
I do agree with that. There is a certain, it's a layering because what happens is then the other meats, as you crinkle on top, you then have, you actually create, they actually fill the void of the other little spots. Yeah. So it's like almost like what it is. So I know I love that. I think that's fantastic because I was really curious. I was like, I wonder what he's going to tell me about that when I ask about that. So I obviously like, I've known you, I was like looking back and I was thinking about this. I go, I think I've known you or we've known each other in some form of social media. This is actually the first time we've ever seen each other, or heck, even talked to each other. We've DM'd and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think it was like when I started Deli Fresh Threads, I came across one of your art pieces and it was like your sandwich hero. And it was a sandwich with a cape flying.
Yeah.
Was the first one. And then I came across where, because you went viral and a lot of people were talking about it, which was your Fugos. And yep. I'll let you kind of tell people what it is, but basically it is food logos, but you did this project. And so I kind of wanted to get a little bit of an idea of where that project kind of came from, and then we'll kind of, then I'll kind of go quick version of what some of the other projects are, and then that way you can kind of talk a little bit about where these ideas are coming from and how you're doing them.
Yeah, sure. So your memory is right on with mine. That's how I remember crossing paths with you too, was that was like my earliest days of social media interaction. It's like 2010 or so was where I was going to pin that.
Yeah.
Because I know for a fact Fugo started in December of 2010. It was right around, it was right after Christmas. And I honestly don't remember how that idea started, but I knew that it was just floating in my head for a while. And for some reason I said, let's do this. And the first one I did was actually the Detroit Red Wings of the NHL, entirely out of ketchup. This was the idea. So in the spring of 2010, I had left my job with the New Jersey Devils. I was a graphic designer with them. And that actually, this is where, now it's kind of coming back to me. This is where it sort of started from. We had a dollar hot dog promotion, you know, all game dollar hot dogs, let this entire arena smell like hot dog burps. What a wonderful day that's going to be. And I remember drawing the logo, just like the silhouette, the outline of the New Jersey Devils logo in ketchup and mustard. And I said, you know, this would be cool to do this with every team. And that's where that started from. So the Red Wings was the most natural fit. This is now, I left the Devils in April of that year. So this is fast forward December, like a whole lot of life has happened and time. And so I did that. I did the Red Wings one. And immediately it came out to like, well, why does it have to only be condiments? And I think it was the same day or the next day. Because, I mean, this was, at this point, I'm now working at an ad agency. And they were based, the home is in England. It's in London. And they are historically closed all of Christmas week. So I had nothing to do that week. There was no work. And I guess that's a British thing. Like companies are closed for Christmas to eat New Year's holiday.
A lot of European companies do that.
Yeah. So that's why we had no work here. It was great. And so I was just, you know, idle hands. So I said, let's do this. So I did the Red Wings one first, and then I did the Philadelphia Flyers out of, I went to ShopRite is the grocery store in New York and New Jersey. And I went to ShopRite and I got some sliced roast beef and just shredded cheddar cheese. And I made the Philadelphia Flyers logo because that also made a little bit of geographic sense with the Philly cheesesteak. Yeah. So you've got the beef and then this cheddar cheese is like, cause the Flyers logo has kind of got this orange eye in the center of the logo sort of. And, so then I did that and then it was just like, well, what else can I do? And that's how that whole thing just sort of snowballed into this weird thing.
And you even went the route, like, I know you did like you did other logos, did you end up doing all NHL logos or did you do like up? Like, I think it was like 20 something of them.
I did most. And then, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, I think you did like a Batman one and you started doing other logos with food. I mean, obviously you can't go wrong with that. I was obviously in my wheelhouse at the time where I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, what is this guy doing when it came to that? And so, I was perplexed and amazed. And I was like, this guy is flipping amazing to me. When I saw that, I was like, I need to be his friend. I need to follow him and see whatever the heck he's going to come up with. And obviously you've come up with quite a few things along the way since then. Like obviously some other things that have kind of gone viral, you know, and kind of just been picked up and a lot of people kind of seem to love projects of notes. You did a project where you basically highlighted every wrestler from like 63, WWF, WCW from like 63 to like 2001. They were kind of, I'm assuming, I kind of almost like Minecraft style. Is that what they were? And then like, And the amazing part is it's like the poster looks like a WWF logo, but then like on your website, when you see it, I love it. Cause it's like, you have it set up where it's like an animation where it cycles through all of them. And it's so fun to be able to see as like every single one. And then from there, you then kind of started doing, and I mean, obviously I may be off on timing on what kind of led to what, but, and you can kind of give me more better details, but the other ones that you've done is like, you've done two X-Men ones. But the cool thing about it is it's not like, oh, X-Men, like you actually created like an X, and then you actually created each X-Men as an X, which to me is kind of crazy. And they called them like X-Men Collection with an X. And then your latest project, which I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. And I know a few people that I've been kind of telling people about it because I think it's so cool. You did before you did that one, you did an Ice Cream Social, which I got very fortunate enough to do during COVID, where you had a different, it was a way to showcase different people. And you did different ways of like all of us, you just gave us like, hey, it's ice cream, do something with it. And you gave us like open type of a concept. I of course did, cause I'm not an artist. I did an ice cream cookie sandwich using the two, the most popular ice creams in Orlando, like the most popular ice cream in Orlando and the cookies in Orlando. But then your most recent one is called Mutant Pizza, which I definitely want to talk about a little bit about, but I also want to know how you came up with the idea when you started making these into trading cards, coming up with cards for a cause. So I know I spit out a lot. So now you can kind of talk about how you want to talk about it. You don't have to go full depth into it, but I'm just kind of curious on like where these ideas come from and then what makes you go, oh yeah, I'm going to do it. And then you just kind of start going through it.
Yeah, sure. Well, that is a lot because we've just kind of like just kind of briefly summarized like the last decade, essentially. Of,
yep.
Not all, but most of my creative endeavors, I guess. So again, like this is going to kind of, I guess, like the main thrust of my personal journey and story is I've been fortunate where I can kind of use my creative skills in like a real professional setting. Like I said, I worked at an ad agency. I am now working for my second National Hockey League team as a creative. So I get to like use these creative juices and stuff in like a real world setting where I can like support a family off this, where, you know, I don't have to have that fear of, oh, I hope I sell these paintings this month. I got a table at a show, which I have done that before. And I love doing that. I like doing it, but I also like that I don't have to sweat doing those things, you know, and I give so much credit to everybody who does, and that's their livelihood. And I'm like, I'm not sure, like, you know, part of my friends, like, I don't know if I really have the balls for that. Like that's hardcore. Like that's tough. And so I've been lucky, but the flip side to that is, I do like even working in a pro sports team, like it's still corporate, it's corporate design. So it's not necessarily scratching that creative itch. So I'm going to flash back all the way to the wrestlers, which there's actually this behind me.
I'm seeing it behind you.
It's a reformatted version of the wrestling poster. It's no longer in the WWF. It's just a simple, because the thing is when I made that poster, it was so huge and unwieldy. It was a really weird size. And I was like, because I wasn't really thinking in terms of final product and how can I get this in people's hands? It was really always just for me initially. So this is more manageable. It's like a 24x36. I have everybody on there and it's just a simple rows and columns, you know? But anyway, that initially started because when I was at the ad agency, I was working in the production department, which you're not really a creative. You have digital creation abilities. Like you can use Photoshop, you can use InDesign, all, you know, Illustrator, all these Acrobat programs. But you're not really making, you're just kind of adapting, you know. And a lot of times it would be like art directors would do the bulk of the work. And then they just say, you do this, do this, do this. And they're just kind of pointing and you're just, we call it pixel pushing. You're just pushing some pixels around. So in my downtime, I said, I got to do something. And the thing I really always wanted to get better at the time was Adobe Illustrator. And so I said, let me just like do something. And I don't remember how it came about, but I said, you know, I'm just going to make some wrestlers, some wrestlers that I loved, very minimalist. And you mentioned that it's very similar to Minecraft, and it 1,000,000% is. That is completely unintentional. At the time, I had no idea what Minecraft was.
Was Minecraft even out at that point?
I think it may have come out by the time I finished, because I started this like casually in 2010 and I finished it in 2013 with a lot of breaks in between. So it was not like, oh my gosh, this guy spent 3 years. So like I said, I just very casually was like, oh, I remember Jake the Snake. Bret Hart, he was my guy. I'll do the Hart Foundation. I'll do the Undertaker. And then I would send them to a buddy at work. And he was like, oh, do Hulk Hogan. Do the Ultimate Warrior. Do Randy Savage. And I'm like, all right, let's see what those guys look like. And then, go ahead.
I was just going to say, So is it true that at one point you you did want to be a wrestler?
I did.
Tell the listeners what your name of your wrestler would have been.
So I actually went to a wrestling tryout in 2012 because also during this time, when I was working at the ad agency, I was working at night. I'm living in New York City. I'm not really a sleeper. Even now.
Is this when you're homeless as well?
It overlapped. It started.
Jesus.
Like, what?
Yes. This is part of my intro, guys. Like, this is the reason why. Like, this may take forever, this episode, but I don't care. I need to know these things because it all sounds like it overlaps. Let's let you finish the story of the wrestler and your wrestling and the wrestling project.
So we kind of got the gist of the wrestling project. So ended up because it was casual. And then I was like, you know what? Where do I stop? Is it the 80s? Is it the 90s? And then I said, well, let me find some like hard checkpoints. In professional wrestling history, the WWWF was initially, I guess, started in 1963 when Buddy Rogers was their first champion. So I said, great, there's the starting point. Where do I end? In 2001, it was December or something or other, there was a pay-per-view. At this point, WCW was purchased by the WWF, and they had this weird invasion angle where they kind of crossed over. Chris Jericho won the WWF and the WCW title to become the first ever unified champion. And so I said, great, that's a solid ending point. So those were my bookends. And now let me fill in every WWF wrestler in between. And so that's what that project became. And I mean, it was looking up, it got into crazy research, like these YouTube rabbit holes. I'm going to the library looking for old Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines just to find photos of guys to say, what did this guy look like when he won the title? Like that, it has to be that. Like I have like an obscene OCD about this stuff. But yeah, so I'm a lifelong wrestling fan. I love wrestling. I actually dip in and out. I'm actually kind of getting back into it a little bit now, but I've been out for a long time.
Okay.
But at that time, I was also I had just run the New York City Marathon in November of 2010, and it was the first time I had done anything like this. I had a roommate in the city who worked for a finance company, and they were sponsoring people to run. You just had to raise like $2,500. And you got a spot. And I said, you know what? I live in New York City right now. This sounds like a great bucket list thing to do. Yes, I'm going to do that. So I did it and I got bit by like the bug. They say that happens. I mean, I wasn't running every day, but which you shouldn't. That running every day is too much running. I was in the gym every day doing something. I was running. I was swimming. I was lifeguarding on the weekends down in South Jersey, leaving New York City on the beach. I'm swimming all weekend. Like, I really was, and I'm not saying this to like sound like I'm bragging, but like I was like in the best shape of my life. Like I've never been in this kind of shape before, ever. And I said, you know what? Like, yeah, I feel great. Like, you know, like I'm strong. And there was an open tryout in Easton, Pennsylvania for like a small wrestling promotion called Chikara, which has since gone under. I think they actually, I don't know if you're following the news. There's like a whole bunch of very disgusting WWF scandalous news out there right now. Chikara went under for something similar, if I'm recalling correctly. It was something like that, but this is way before that. And they had an open tryout and I went. I'm not going to say I did good, but I didn't do terrible. And the one thing I was able to do that I got like a half-assed standing ovation from the random performers that were there watching and coaching. There was a moment where you had to run directly into the turnbuckle at the corner, climb the ropes as you're running and see if you could like, I think it's like, we could stand on the ropes. The Undertaker used to do this popularly. You could stand on the ropes. You could just walk across the top rope.
Yeah.
I was able to walk across the whole thing. And then I dropped down and I threw my arms up in glory and everybody like, whoa, it was the only thing I really did really well. And I was like, yeah, I want to do this, but I was committed to lifeguarding for the rest of that summer. I was like, I'm going to come back to this in September. Well, I screwed up my neck later that summer, and then I just never followed through because I was like, whatever.
What would have been your wrestling name?
I had the whole thing set up. Shredded Wheat, the Serial Killer. I had crazy long hair at the time. I was like, you know, I would be a great, they call it a chicken shit heel. Just a bad guy who's just like a coward. you know, and I'd put my hair in pigtails or something like that. They, you know, just get real heat. Like people would hate somebody like that. Coming down the ring, munching on a cereal box every match. I dig into the cereal box to take out the prize. It'd be like brass knuckles or like, you know, salt or something. You throw salt in the other
this
guys.
This is so great. So great.
Pin him. And then the way the story would end, finally, I'm working my way up the rankings. I get a championship match. And mind you, I would have a giant bodyguard type that I would always hide behind, my muscle, you know, my heavy. His name would be Coco Crisp. It's just a big dude. And Coco, and I would treat him horrible, right? And so people would be waiting for him to turn on me. I get my championship match. He throws me the box of cereal, as we've done a million times. We're like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to cheat. He's going to hit this. He's going to hit the champ with brass knuckles and he's going to win. And I'd pull out the prize and it would be like a kazoo or a Beanie Baby or like an actual cereal prize. And I'd just be so confused and I'd just stare at it. And the champ would roll me up. They call it a schoolboy, pin me, 1, 2, 3. It's over. I lose. And I'm like, what happened? And then Coco beats the crap out of me. And that's how the story would end.
That's how you, yeah, I love how you even had your own storyline already wrapped up. That's hilarious. So I know we also talked about the X-Men and the mutant pizza. Yeah. Tell people a little bit about the concept of what made you come up with Cards for a Cause and that whole X-Men thing. I'm assuming X-Men because you just have a love for X-Men, similar yeah. idea. They're like, I want to do the same thing, but do it this way.
Yeah, so there's actually two separate X-Men projects. And the first
I was going to say, there's two of them, right?
It's spun out of the wrestling project. While I was creating these wrestlers here, I thought to myself, doing the same thing, but for the X-Men, but a different shape. Like you said, it is like an X, and that is the intent. But I saw it one day as we had, you know, the men's room and the women's room at work. You know, they have like those little bathroom icons that everyone knows, a circular yeah. head floating above a body that's just stiffly straight. And one day I just, again, when you're bored at work and you're a creative person, like you just have to find ways to entertain. I mean, everyone just finds ways to entertain yourself, but I get to take it to another level. So I designed a different bathroom icon where it was that X-Men guy. And I just wrote, so there's the women's room and then there was the X-Men room. So, cause you know, just usually it's that body and it says men.
Yeah.
So I had the body with the X splayed out there and it just says X-Men. And that's where that started. So then I started doing the same thing for that. And I recreated every single character through the 545 issues of Uncanny X-Men, the first official volume of which there are now several, which spans something like 40 years or something like that, 45 years, I don't know. And not just every character, but every time they had a costume change. So for instance, Wolverine has this brown and gold costume, but he's also got the costume that people know from the cartoon, which is bright yellow and blue with like the blue undies. And, you know, Cyclops has a million costumes. So every time they had a different costume, I created that character again. And so that's at a website. You could check it out. I mean, it loads slow as heck because I'm not a web guy at all.
Yeah.
So I apologize for that. But if you go to allxmen.com, it's still there. And if you click on any character, you'll have to wait for it for a minute to load, but then it'll just show every iteration of that character exclusively. So that was one thing. And then that was like 2016, 17. And that kind of blew up kind of big. And now in this like Twitter sphere, I kind of knew a few people in the X-Men community, guys who had podcasts and stuff like that, other artists. And fast forward to 2019, right before the pandemic, just, you know, train of thought, verbal diarrhea. I threw it out there. I was like, hey, remember X-Men cards? Like when we were kids in the early 90s, they were all drawn by Jim Lee. They were awesome. Like these were like on par with like baseball cards, sports cards. Even my friends who didn't care about comics had X-Men cards. And I said, that'd be cool if they brought those back. And just like, again, a haphazard comment with a few people turned into, all right, well, we have to do this now. And I said, well, who's going to do it? And, you know, I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to do it. Like nobody else is stepping up to say, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I said, so I'll do it. So, and we just kind of backed into the whole Cards for the Cause thing because like, I wanted to get these out there. And I'll admit, I was worried. I didn't want to have the IP police come and, you know, crashing down on me, and then what? And so I said, you know what, if we give all the money to charity, which I'm totally cool with, because like, how am I going to split, you know, if I have 20 artists who are making 50 cards, like everyone's going to get what, like $3? Like, what's the point of that? But if we can pool all that money and just give it to like a good cause, let's do that. So it worked out really well. My company wound up matching my contribution of what I raised, and we did two sets of cards. They matched both times. We wound up raising over $5,000 for the Equal Justice Initiative, which I thought was a very a cause that the X-Men would support. Like, it's about underprivileged people getting fair trials and what have you. So I thought that was like a good thing. So that's where Cards from a Cause was born from. And I said, well, I want to do this again. And that's where the turtles came from with Mutant Pizza. And here we are. It just wrapped that up in November.
How many artists did you have as part of that? Because I know you had a bunch of different, like, there were a few. Lot of cards.
Yeah. So with the first X-Men set, I want to say it was 27. And we had 57 or 58 cards. It was a weird random number. And then from there on, again, lessons learned as you go through these things, you kind of fall forward and stumble your way through these things. Like, oh, okay, what if we did this? What if we did that? So for series two, I wanted to have what I call an even number for cards. And that means a multiple of 9. So you could fit it in like a nice binder and it would just end nicely. So we had 81 cards for the second collection series. And I think it was near 40 artists for that. Give or take. Wow. I don't really remember. And it was about the same number for Mutant Pizza. And that was the biggest, most unwieldy card set. And it didn't fall at the even number. I think we have 103. But we crossed 100, and that's just a ton of cards.
I was going to say, that is definitely a ton of cards. The other project that I kind of brought up that you, like, I think you have like a personal goal where you're trying to paint every single Muppet.
Yep.
Is that correct? Is that just like a thing that you just like? So the underlining thing, like, what's the one thing that I'm noticing for like all these passion projects? Like, what's the common thread, would you say? Obviously, besides you loving these things, because if you didn't, you wouldn't go OCD looking into all this stuff. But what is the common thread on doing all these things?
Yeah, the projects? Through line is really like just like, I guess, a form of psychosis. I say all the time, I'm not the world's greatest graphic designer. I'm fully aware of where my limitations are. I know I'm good at some things. I know I'm not good at some things. But I also think if you look at these projects specifically, nobody else is going to take this effort. Nobody else is going to put that energy to this degree. And I think it's the repetition, oh my gosh, this guy made 1,200 little Minecrafty wrestlers. This guy made 2,500 X-Men icons, went through 550 comics to find them. And they're accurate. Like, this guy put in the time. Like, that's the thing. No one's going to out-hustle me, because there was a time in my life that everybody out-hustled me. And I guess that's part of my story too, is like, I was always good in school. I was lazy as hell though. You know, that's the thing. Like, I was always lazy. Right. And when you're lazy and you get good results, all that does is say, I can afford to continue to be lazy. I guess it's like a tortoise and the hare sort of story, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was the hare, like, I'm fast. No one's going to be able, I'm going to take a nap forever and I'll still win this race. And I remember there came a time, and it was around the time that I went back, that I was at the ad agency after I had left the Devils in 2010, around the time that I started this wrestler project where I was like, I need to get good at Illustrator. That's when the things started clicking for me. I was like, oh, I need to put in effort, because I was seeing people that were lapping me that I was like, that guy's not as good as me. That girl's not as good as me. And in some ways that was true, but in other ways, yeah, they were better than me because they were putting in the work and I wasn't putting in any work for anything. And I was just expecting things to happen and they weren't. So since that time, like, you know, I kind of squandered a few opportunities because there's always another one. And, you know, you just think like, oh, there's always going to be another one. There's always going to be another. And eventually they dry up. It's like, I'm 42 years old now. So, you know, I feel like the bulk of the opportunities that are just going to fall in my lap are probably behind me, you know? But if I can show, hey, I'm putting in effort, like that's desirable. You know what I mean? Whether it's, you know, to whoever is hiring, you know, that's what people are looking for. Like, oh, this guy's going to put in the work. He's not going to let anybody out hustle him. And again, that actually all started from when I started training to run a marathon. Like when I saw the transformation in my body, I was like, holy smokes, like I put in a lot of work and I'm seeing results. And I guess it just transferred over to my career in a way. And when things weren't happening in my career the way I wanted them to, I said, well, I'm just going to make the career I want. And that's where the X-Men comes in. That's where these Muppet paintings come in. Again, I am not the world's greatest painter, but I kind of stumbled into my own painting style through doing the Muppets.
Yeah, tell people a little bit about that painting style, because it's like a mixture of different styles.
Yeah, I was initially trying to create this kind of the fur on Muppets. They call it flocking. It's in other things as well. Any sort of furry type thing, it's flocked. It's just kind of this fuzzy nature. And I was trying to get this fuzziness to it, and it wasn't really working. And I remember the first one I did was Animal, because, you know, he's popular. Everyone loves Animal. And then this is wild. I'm going to throw this all the way back to first grade, Fairfield, New Jersey, art class. My teacher, Mr. Hauer, this was like one of the first people who really, like, will always feel indebted to Mr. Hauer, Carl Hauer, for supporting and promoting me to like continue artistic endeavors. I don't think I'd probably be like some miserable banker or something today if it wasn't for a guy like him, you know. And I actually found him on LinkedIn a few years ago, and I let him know, and he was like, oh, I remember you. Yeah, like you were always on the go. And I was like, I just want to say thank you. And it felt really good to get that out. I'm glad he was still around. You know, he's like retired in Florida somewhere now. He's in your neck of the woods.
Probably. And,
it was just great though that like, so this guy always supported me, but I remember in his class, it was first grade, he exposed us to like real painters and, you know, like art history. And it's like, it's funny. I just always assumed that's what art class was. And I see what my kids have now. I have two kids. It's junk. Like it just doesn't compare what they're doing compared to what I was doing. And I was just in, you know, regular public school. It wasn't like some school for gifted kids or anything. Yeah. Like there was no tuition. But I remember he exposes to George Surratt, and it was Picnic in the Park, pointillism. So long story medium, the whole Muppet style was a form of pointillism where I was hiding my artistic like rendering, shading, blending deficiencies by just slapping paint on the canvas. And it wasn't really pointillist because these were like giant blotches. They were bigger. But you know, every painting is like 6, 7, 8 colors that are not the color that you're looking at, but your eye is just interpreting it that way. And this is actually kind of spun out of Fugo's in a way. It's like roast beef arranged in such a way, like that shouldn't look like the Philadelphia Flyers logo. Oh, but it yeah. did because it was arranged in such a way. That's kind of how the paint worked too. Because again, so Fugo's, I'm all over the place.
That's okay.
That I didn't want to, I don't waste food. I refuse to waste anything. So I ate everything that I made. I ate. Except for probably the ketchup of that first one, the Detroit Red Wings. But I've eaten every single thing that you see. They still exist in as photos somewhere online yeah. on my website. I ate all of that. So I don't like wasting anything. But like it was also hard. I was like, I like making art. I like doing things. But I'm kind of getting tired of messing around with food. And at the end of the day, it would be nice to have something to show for it and not have it be so, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess transitional, like it just exists for a short period of time and then yeah. it's gone. Transient. And so that's where I started getting into painting, and that's kind of how that all came about. So yeah, it's like I've probably done 60, 70 different Muppets, and a lot of them I've done multiple times now because people, you know, that's kind of become my online calling card. Every now and then somebody out of the woodwork be like, hey, I've seen these, can you make me a Cookie Monster? Okay, yeah, I've done 100 Cookie Monsters, here's 101. That's fine. And I always try to make them different, you know. I try not to do the same thing.
It's funny because I actually was looking through on your website because I was looking for the magician who says, you know, he does peanut butter and jelly as his part of his act, and yeah. I saw a picture of him in there along with a bunch of other ones, Grover and a bunch of other amazing ones that you've done. I have a few little things I'm kind of curious about, because like, what made you decide to join the Navy at 39? Like, what was like, how did, like, where did that like kind of go? I'm kind of like the more I read everything, I was just like, how the heck am I going to try to like bring, cause like, I just, to give people an idea, like of so many different things that you've gone through. I know you've been homeless, but then you're also, your house is burned down. You know, you've experienced quite a bit of things, but I am kind of curious on why the heck you decided, you're married with kids and you're like, I'm going to join the Navy.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it almost sounds like you're framing like, oh, this guy's such an idiot. Like, what a schmuck. And I know you don't mean it that way, but I'm just saying the average person hearing this would be like, oh, this guy's just screwed everything up. So this is what he had to do. And that wasn't the case. Like I said, I had a good job, technically, you know, I had a good career, but like I said, I never really, at the ad agency that I was at, I never really got the creative opportunities because, like I said, at first it was my fault. I didn't put in the work, but by the time I did, I was already pigeonholed. Like, this is what this guy does. You know what I mean? Like, he's not this, he's this. They had already put me into a box and there was no getting out of that box. And I had applied for any number of jobs. But again, because I wasn't getting those creative jobs where I was, the creative projects, I wasn't getting the creative career path. So that's why, again, some of these insane projects were a necessity. Like, I had to build the portfolio that I wanted. Like, I don't want it. I could easily have a portfolio filled with beautiful PowerPoint slides. Guess what? I don't want to be a PowerPoint designer. I don't want to do that. So I had to make the things that I wanted to make to then hopefully find a job that fit those things. And it just wasn't happening. And, you know, my wife actually has some health issues. I'm not going to get too into it.
Yeah.
It's just there. But I was concerned. Now we're in the early stages of COVID where everyone still thought it was going to be a 3-week vacation before we had to go back to the office. But at some point during that, when we realized, okay, this is going to go a little bit longer, I took like a really steep pay cut just to stay employed. Now, granted, I'm working from home and I live on Long Island. I commuted into the city. It was 2 hours each way on the train. God. So, I mean, this is a part-time job just to get to and from work. So I've eliminated these train costs, but at the same time, this is just like no way to live. Like, I'm, you know, like a zombie all day. You know, I'm not really seeing anybody during the week. And it's just the whole weekend now is just cramming as many things as I can, whether they're activities with the kids, with the family, or just doing chores around the house, mowing the lawn, like going grocery shopping and stuff. You know, my wife works a full-time job too. So like, we're like burning the candle. We found new ends of the candle to burn. It's not just two ends. We found new ends. Yeah. So I see the writing on the wall too. As like I said, COVID's here. My department from 2016 to COVID shrank from 25 to 3, including myself. Wow. So the company's not doing so hot. And I say, the Navy calls me, hey, why don't you enlist? And people are like, well, that sounds random. It's not as random as it sounds. I have been in their system because I remember I was interested in doing this in high school. And I guess it was one of those career fairs. I gave them my phone number and I've never changed my phone number ever. Wow. So I've been in this system and like clockwork, Biggie, every 3, 4, 5 years or so, I'll get a call from some random chief, some random first class petty officer. Hey, why don't you join the Navy? I'm like, yeah. Okay. No, that was a different time. I got stuff to do. You know, I got a job. I got a kid. I got 2 kids. It's not happening. And this time, though, I listened and I was like, you know what? This is something I always thought about doing. I'm now about a decade removed from being in peak physical condition. I would love to test myself physically again.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I'm going to jump through all these hoops and just see what happens. And my wife was fully 1,000,000% supportive of this. She did say, she's like, do you think this is going to be worth it? Or is it just going to be a hassle? And I said, Danielle, one of 2 things is going to happen. I'm going to pass on this. I'm going to let it slide. I'm going to wonder what if, and within 18 months, I'll be out of a job. And let me just couch all this by saying I'm in the Navy Reserves. I am not full-time active duty or anything like that. And I said, I'll be out of a job in 18 months if I don't do this. If I do this, the way the universe works, yes, this is going to be a major headache because something is going to like explode out of nowhere with my real job creatively. It's going to go great. And this is going to be a complete headache that I don't need. And that's exactly what happened. So I wound up going to boot camp and then at people that, so boot camp was 10 weeks because there's an extra 2 weeks tacked on because of COVID protocols. This is now summer of 2021. Because it was a long process to even get to there, to get to this point. And then you go to something called A school, which you get trained for your Navy job. And that was another few months. So I was gone a total of about 6.5 months, almost 7 months. And wow. I came home right before Thanksgiving of that year. It was like a really nice refresh. But in the meantime, while I was there, I was doing freelance work for the New York Islanders, like on the side. And before I left for boot camp, I told him, I was like, hey, I'm going to be gone. I'm not ghosting you guys, but I'm doing this thing. I've decided I'm going to join the Navy. I just want to see what I could do. And they're like, wow, like that's crazy. But like in a good way, congratulations. We hope to be in touch. So at some point in the summer, while I was in Virginia at my A school, I get a call from the Islanders like, hey, can you do some work? I go, I can't, like, I don't have any of my stuff. I'm still doing Navy stuff. I am slowly reassimilating to the real world. And one day I came back from class and I'm in, you know, they're called type threes, the green camo fatigues. Mm-hmm. And I'm in my type three uniform and, I have a Zoom interview, or not an interview. It was just an informal chat or so they said. And this is a guy who's kind of high up with the Islanders. And I'm convinced they didn't offer me a job until 6 months later, February of 22. But I'm convinced that that Zoom call, they looked at me and they said, they just saw what I was wearing and they just said, this is a real man. We have to hire this guy. And the joke's on them, you know, but it's too late now. No backsies.
What was your job? Like when you go through that Navy experience, like what's your job in the Navy then?
So I'm really just essentially just like admin. It's really just a lot of paperwork. Like it's nothing crazy. You know, I mean, I touched a gun once in boot camp. I'm a sharpshooter, according to the United States government. I have a great shot. But I'm not a gun person really per se. I'm not like, I feel comfortable like handling it and I'm glad I did it. Again, cool experience, but like, it's not for me. I don't need that. I mean, boot camp was very eye-opening in a lot of ways. Like it was tough, but it was also really easy in a lot of ways. And I was shocked. I'll be honest. Like I was worried I was going to be able to keep up with these kids who were literally half my age. And, you know, I quickly learned that a lot of them couldn't keep up with me. And you know, I wasn't the best. I wasn't the fastest at everything, but I was like near the top of everything. And I think a lot of it's just like, again, it's world experience. Like I had experience, not because like, I'm like some specimen of any sort, like intellectually, physically, anything. Like it's just like I've just been around the block a little bit, so I just have a different perspective. Like I remember there's this one kid who anytime somebody looked at him funny, like he wanted to fight them, and I was like my man, like this guy's not putting food on your table and he's not taking it off your table. You got to let that go. It doesn't matter. And so everybody called me Pops because they were like, this old man. So I was Pops. And but it was great. Like late at night after we were all done getting chewed out and yelled at, you know, all I wanted to do was go to bed, but people would inevitably be like, hey, like, what do I do about this? What do I like? Oh, I got my girl back home, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm just kind of offering my 2 cents and, you know, giving advice. People are like, yeah, I can't wait to spend this Navy check. I was like, my guy, you're an E3, which is about 2 rungs higher than the lowest level. You're not getting paid a lot of money. Do not get a Ferrari. Save your money. You're going to be in Iraq for like 9 months. That car is just going to sit in a garage somewhere. You're going to make payments on it. You're going to come back. It's not going to run. Don't do that, please. So, you know, like just trying to like offer some perspective to these guys that they weren't really going to get anywhere else. But it was like a really cool experience. Like, it's funny that our chief said in boot camp, this is going to be the best experience you've ever had that you never want to go through again. And I was like, that's like a weird thing. And looking back now, 2-3 years later, yeah, I kind of like agree with that. It was a great experience that I never want to do again, but it was really good and it was good for me.
And then do you still serve? So is it a monthly every yes. month for a weekend what you do or?
Yep. It's I have a every month. Now I serve 2 units, one in Virginia, one in New York. So I alternate. And that's where I say this is a hassle. And it is.
Yeah.
Like everyone in it knows it. And it's unfortunate that like you don't really know this if you're not already in there. It's like this like secret cheat code. But, you know, oh, here's the pitfall. Oh, thanks. I wish somebody told me this before. Yeah. It's fine, too. You know, I feel put out sometimes, but like when I'm in there and I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, you know what? Even though what I'm doing is so rudimentary and clerical and basic, I still feel like I'm contributing and I'm like, I guess I'm helping a little, or maybe that's just me just trying to justify it to myself.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, okay, I'm okay with this. It's cool. And then every year you have 2 weeks of what they call AT, active training, where you're just kind of just doing something more specific to your rate, your Navy job. And that can be anywhere. You can kind of split that up and you could do more, you could do less. I'll be honest, I do the bare minimum because now that I'm like here at the Islanders, like I just don't have time to devote to this. And part of it was like, yeah. I wanted to have that fallback for us in case something happened, specifically for healthcare, because like I said, you know, my wife has some issues here and I go, I don't know where we're going to be, you know, in 2022, three, four, yeah. when this all started. And so like, you know, it was like a safety net that thankfully I don't really need right now, which is great, but who knows when that may change again, you know?
Correct. So, no, I totally get that. So going back to my intro and based on something, what you said as well, like I'm most people don't experience some of the things you've experienced in your life so far. Like, I know you said to me, and you even brought it up, like, that, you know, like people may think I'm like, you know, like an idiot who sorts like sort of stumbles through life, but like, I don't think it happens. These things, like, you know, falling into the right place. Like, I do feel like, yes, there are some sometimes forms of luck, but I also feel like it's got to go back to like the idea of like, yes to adventure, yes to feeling uncomfortable, mm-hmm. You know, in your own, in like, you know, being comfortable in uncomfortable positions.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to talk a little bit about that, because like, I could tell you that like, for me, I tend to be like, obviously I do, you know, I kind of the same idea, my project of Deli Fresh Threads, the podcast are all things of like outlets of things that I want to do, because these are things of future that I want to have. But at the same time, like, I still have a corporate job and do the corporate, mm-hmm. do corporate life and do all of that. So I love the fact that, like, you know, that's something that you've been able to kind of do where you have that balance. But at the same time, it seems like you've been very comfortable being uncomfortable. And I kind of want to talk a little bit about like where that comes from and like, and that thought process that you have, because that's very difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. I do feel like that. I guess in retrospect, I feel comfortable being uncomfortable when you look back, but always in the moment, I'm not. You know, like, it's just, it's okay to be scared and it's okay to be worried, but you just still need to put your foot forward, I guess. You know, it sounds like a little cliche, maybe a little cheesy, but like, I guess I don't really know a better way to put it. Like, sometimes you just gotta, it's like, all right, this is what it is. Like, I know I can't afford to just, you know, pull the blanket over my head and hide, you know? So, and again, right now, like, I'm at a stage in my life where like literally every decision I make is for three other people who are upstairs right now. So it's like, okay, I have to weigh the pros and cons. And there are times, honestly, where I'm probably passing on an adventure for myself because it really is just for me. And I'm like, well, this isn't going to do anything for them. You know, yeah. I wish I could give you an example like offhand, but I think you know what I mean. It's like, sometimes you just need to make like a few sacrifices. Like, okay, this is not just about me now, but a lot of other times too, it was like, okay, you know what? This could be really fun. This wild, crazy thing. So the whole homeless thing, there's, again, that was two stories. Earlier you said, you mentioned being homeless and you also mentioned my house burning down. Those were not related. Those are two separate events. So, being homeless when I was living in the city, I got to a point where I realized, again, working in advertising, I was at the ad agency all the time. And when I wasn't there, I was at the gym. And if I wasn't at the gym, I had my stuff at the gym because I was out for a run. I was out swimming. I was doing something physical, staying active. So I said to myself, you know what? I think I could just skip this whole apartment thing that I was sharing with three other people and start pocketing some money and start saving some money. And so that's what I did. So I guess it was like homeless by choice. It wasn't really, I'm not going to sit here and pretend, the struggle. Like, I was so down on my luck. It wasn't that. I was like, you know what? I did see though that I was like, I don't feel like I'm going to get ahead in life unless I really take like a really ballsy chance right here and just say, okay, let's see what happens. You know, I'm fortunate enough. I guess it worked out, but I also learned a lot about myself, you know, throughout all that. I was like, oh, you know what? Things that seem really difficult are really not as difficult, you know, as you may perceive them to be. Like, once you're in the throes of it, it's like you just make it happen. So, I mean, that was like a whole thing. Like I said, I was at work. I had a bag of clothes with me that I left in my office at all times. You know, I did my laundry once a week, and then I was at the gym and I showered, I brushed my teeth, you know, I shaved, you know, all my hygiene stuff would happen at the gym essentially. And, you know, you live in New York City, like everybody's just going out to eat. And I mean, I would sparsely go out to eat. Like, I was just living off canned salmon from Trader Joe's, again, just saving as much as I could. And then I remember it was funny. It was the spring of 2012. And I was like, you know what? I should probably like rejoin society again because I'm not really doing anything. I'm just kind of like a ghost in every other life. Like nobody knows who I am anymore. Like the friends that I knew, because again, New York City is just like, again, it's this melting pot of obviously people coming from all over. People are leaving, you know, the people because I'm now at this point, I guess I'm like 30, 31. And, you know, people are going back from to where they came from, or they were taking jobs in other parts of the country or whatever. Cause we're just at that age where, you know, you're still able to move around and experience new things. And I just felt myself just slipping. And so I remember I landed an apartment in Greenpoint, which is in Brooklyn, just outside Manhattan. And 1 week later, I met the woman who would become my wife, and it was just crazy, like how lightning fast it all just flipped wow. around. I was like, oh, wherever you are, that's where you're supposed to be.
I love that. I love that. No, and I think sometimes we tend to forget those things about like where you're supposed to be or this is happening and why it's happening. And sometimes when the crappy things hit the fan and then later on you kind of go back and you kind of start thinking about it, you realize like, oh, well, if these things didn't happen, then these things wouldn't have happened. And you don't realize it when you're in it, once you're amongst it or in it or dealing with it. It's really kind of how you interpret it and how you want to, what you want to make of it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's kind of the key to how you've kind of done it. But I mean, you know, and the fact of how you've kind of looked at it, because like you said, like you don't like being uncomfortable, but you put yourself in those opportunities because sometimes you have to in order to get to where you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at yourself. I mean, I'm seeing behind you got like all these shirts and stuff, and there's gotta be times where you're like, like, is this like, I mean, do you have that where you're like,
yes,
is this the right design? Like, should I make yes. this commitment? Because once you hit send, you can't like unsend that email. You can't turn back that transaction.
I have a lot of those moments where through the last 11 years where it's like, is this, and for me, especially since I come up with the idea and I'll doodle ideas, but I'm not the graphic designer. So I'm paying for someone. So then it's mm-hmm. like, that's an extra cost. So it's like,
yes.
So it's like extra cost, pay for designer, and then they pay for printing and then everything else and the time that comes with it. And then if it's a dud, Those are hard. Those are always hard. And then you always tend to always kind of, you know, and sometimes you do sound a second guess, like, why am I doing this? You know, you kind of like, why am I doing this? Same idea, like this podcast, I do the podcast because I do it for me, but I also do it because I want to be able to share and tell people and hopefully inspire other people. But then sometimes I'm like, are people actually listening? Because it's not like podcast statistics are like the craziest thing. Like there is no real way of knowing because each platform, like Spotify, I do things through Spotify. So Spotify will tell me what Spotify listeners do, but guess what? Like 54% of my listeners are on Apple. So right. then it's like, well, how, like, and then there's other places. So then you're like, well, how many people are listening? Who's listening? Do people care? Yeah. You know? And it's like, and a lot of times for a lot of these things, you know, kind of like how you see is like, your reaction is based on how people in the interaction is the reaction. Sometimes mm-hmm. like, are people buying it? And mm-hmm. then like, are enough people seeing it? Who's seeing it? So a lot of times that's something that I kind of get to deal with. And I do have a lot of doubt sometimes. And sometimes it also puts you in a spot where you're like, I don't want to know if I want to do a red t-shirt because mm-hmm. no one likes red. You know what I mean? No one wants to wear red. It's kind of like a perfect example, like orange t-shirts, like, orange t-shirts you wear because you're either in my neck of the woods in Florida, you're a Gator fan, or if you're like an Islander fan or a Knicks fan, then yeah. maybe you'd wear it, but most likely you're probably going to wear the blue version of the color versus it being orange. And then sometimes like you have like those ideas where you're like, oh, I should make this shirt as orange. And then I'm like, yeah, but who the heck's going to buy it? Mm-hmm. And then that's like the struggle that you have sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny too, specifically when you say orange, being that I'm dealing with blue and orange all the time,
I know
I have junior designers under me, and every now and then, like some of them come back. I'm like, dude, I hate this orange. Please make it blue instead. Make it white. Like, I don't want to see the orange overpowering. Cause it is, it's so loud. You have to be in the right. There's times for it, but I totally yep. get what you're saying. And before yep. I forget, I do want to say, and I'm sorry that I'm going to give you a cheap plug, but okay. you know, you're the host. Here it is. A while ago, I don't know what you call it. I call it the Vitruvian Man shirt. It's like the sandwich, and you see all the layers building up. It looks like it's like hand-drawn.
Yes, that is that was originally my BLT, yep. which is back, but it's in a different version because the one you have, I think, is the tan one, right?
Yes, I have the tan one.
I brought it back. I brought it back as a blue because a lot of people don't like tan shirts. I brought it back again, but I made it a blueprint. So now it's a BLT blueprint.
I saw it.
Is what it is, but yes.
So the funny thing about that is my wife has a lot to say about my choice of clothing. And that one, though, specifically, she's like, because, you know, I'm the guy walking around with a t-shirt of Skeletor's head on it. And she's like, you look like you dress like our son. And I'm like, that you should be ashamed of yourself. And I'm like, ah, whatever. But that's a shirt that she from day one is like, I actually really like that shirt. She's like, it's too bad. You're probably going to wear that all the time. I'm going to get sick of it.
I think it's funny that she says that because there are a lot of shirts that I see in the kids departments that I was like, I would wear that if they had an adult version of that.
No, she's very proper. So. Like, it's funny, like opposites attract. Like we are very, very much opposite. Like even, she says all the time, she calls it like my nerd SHIT. She's like, I don't really get your nerd SHIT, but like if people like it, like, okay, it's not my cup of tea. I don't want your artwork hanging up in our house, but somebody else does. And I think that's great. thanks.
It's funny that you say that because if you look on the top shelf of all my stuff is like all my nerd, like all my stuff that it's like, and my wife is very good at it, like buying me like, and she'll find thoughtful things and if she sees things. She's like, hey, this is sandwich related. Here's what it is. And she'll get it for me. But this is the only room that it belongs in. She doesn't like, it's not one of those things that's incorporated in my house.
Yeah. Same.
So I totally feel you on that, Scott. For sure. When it comes to that, I guess one question that I always like, I'm going to ask, I have two more questions. My first one is what, now that you've done Mutant Pizza, that's what it was called, which by the way, I love the little details of the things on the back of like the chef and like where they're from and all those things. Like I absolutely love like all those little touches. Those are all things that I nerd out on because I love the little details when it comes to that. Do you have like a project now that you're starting to think about, like what your next big project's going to be or thought process of what you're thinking of?
Yeah. So I'll be honest, the Mutant Pizza, so the X-Men cards, the first set, gone in an hour. We made 50 sets. They were gone in 1 hour. The second set, I bumped it up to 99. I don't know why. I just decided in my head that 100 would be like possibly like pushing the envelope a little too much. And with, again, the IP police, again, even though this is all for charity, I was like, we'll just make it 99. Like, what's one less? Those were gone in a few days. These ones have just been sitting for a while. And I think part of it is because I've never been part of like any real turtle community. So maybe there's no in, or maybe there's just no demand for it. I don't know. So I'm just sitting on piles of cards and having those doubts that, you know, we were just talking about. I was like, oh man, can I just kind of like waste? Because I put out everything up front, right? Like the printing costs and everything. And so, you know, I'll be honest, I recouped my printing cost with the X-Men cards and then all the proceeds then went forward. So I am a little gun shy about another huge project like that at the moment. But I also am like, you know, I've been doing all these other things that's like real collaborative. I think I want to just do like a me project. So I have a couple of things that I want to do. But one of them, the one that I really need to focus on, because for years, Biggie, on and off, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do a comic book. And I always find a reason to not do it. And like I say, I always say yes to adventure, but I always say no to myself, you know, and just for whatever reason, I'm like, nah, but I'm going to do a children's book. So I have this story kind of fleshed out. You know, I'm on like draft number 14 already, you know, where, you know, just all of it's on paper, just crossing out, rewriting, crossing out. And then I type it up. And as I type it up, I'm like, oh, that sounds weird. And then, you know, reworking that, and it's all in rhyming couplets. So, you know, it's got to have the right cadence. And, so that's something I'm working on. That was one of my New Year's resolutions, was to get this like finalized. When I say finalized, it's all going to be all written, and then I have to illustrate it myself. And then from there, with a finished product, like this is, again, kind of my mentality. Like, I need to make it be undeniable for people. I don't want you to say, ah, look at all this other work that has to happen. No, I've done all the work. All the work is done. All you need to do is push forward. I want to make it as easy for somebody. And I don't know who that somebody is because I don't know anything about the publishing world. So these are just another thing I'm going to just fall forward into, I hope.
I will say, like, the comic book, if you're interested in doing a comic book or whatever, you should definitely listen to one of my previous guests, Justin Peterson. He's got two comics that he's done, and he's like self-published and done that. And even though he has like a, you know, corporate job as well, but like that's something that he's wanted to do, and he's an interesting cat. That's an interesting read, and you can give him a follow on social and stuff, and it'll be a good one to be able to ask. As a matter of fact, he's the one, when you reached out to me about cards, who makes the cards, I name dropped him and said, oh, I reached out to him about where he gets his printing done, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm reaching out to mine over here. So he might be a good person to kind of chat with about that aspect of it. He's self-published, but obviously there's other options and other ways that you can kind of do it, you know, when it comes to that. And that's awesome, because like at one point I actually, during COVID, did a version of Goodnight Moon, but it was called Goodnight Sandwich with my family, and we actually hand drew it. And one of my friends actually said, he's like, you should totally make that into a book. And I was like, but then my wife, who's a speech therapist, she's like, oh my gosh, I would love it for it to be like the way it's supposed to be, with like where you can touch it and the feels of the different things. And I was like, oh, that's way more intense than what I want. Like, I would just want to get a book made, and here's my art, and maybe have someone else do better version of it, and actually create a book, because I think that would be just a fun, you know, Goodnight Sandwich.
Yeah.
And it was something that we did as a family. We all sat down together and kind of wrote it out and drew the pictures, and I did it in Post-it and a index card is how I drew it. And then I actually had my my puppet at one point read it, you know, my Biggie Bread puppet read it. So that's something that I've always kind of wanted to, I don't know, I think it'd be kind of fun to do. So I feel you when you get there, but definitely, I think that's cool. I think that's a great idea. The fact of like, it's a comic or a children's book,
this
or both?
This is a children's book. This is not okay. A comic. And you know what? Getting back to the comic real quick, this was the one thing, and you just jogged my memory. When I was listening to the Toxic Roots show, I think that's who said it, was this guy. It's hard for me to sometimes reconcile that art doesn't need to be perfect. Like, it's just about progress going forward. And a lot of times, like, I do this self-talk where you talk yourself out of a thing because you're like, this doesn't look great, so forget it. You throw everything off the table, you know, and just like, that's it. And then, you know, I have that in me too. You know what I mean? It's like, it's hard sometimes to just be like, okay, it doesn't need to look awesome right now. Like, you can refine this, which is also very weird for me to say, because this is the kind of process that I do day to day in my regular job all the time. So why can't I now apply those same rules when I'm doing my own thing? You know what I mean? Like, it's hard for me to sit down and sketch, because I'm like, well, these sketches are trash. Like, this needs to be a finished, beautiful piece. And it's like, I need to reconcile that in my mind. And I feel like sometimes my output would be, it is so low because of that.
Yeah. And I think, and especially in your world compared to me, because of the fact that you are an artist, like for me, the sketches and the doodles, to me, I look at them as brainstorming ideas that you then build upon. It's kind of like, this is just like, it's just an outline. I'm just coming up with what it is and then kind of seeing different perspectives, versus it being like, it's got to be perfect right off the spot, which is definitely not something that happens. What advice would you give someone for wanting to start something?
To start something, honestly, like, and this is something I have to remind myself too, is kind of what we're talking about right now in this moment. Like, you just got to do it. You know, it's like, what do you want to do? Don't think about, I've made this mistake for years. When this is part of my laziness, that my lazy phase is, I have to wait my turn. You know, like, this will come eventually, or I'm not an expert at this yet, but if I do XYZ, I go to this school, I take this class, I do this, then I won't be an expert. No, don't wait for that, because you're only ever going to be an expert by doing. You know, yeah, you might have some, like, and I'm not advocating against education or anything like that. But, you know, you just need to do the thing, whatever it is. You know, whether you want to paint something, you say, oh, I'm not that good of a painter, I should take classes first. Well, yeah, there's value, obviously, in classes. You'll learn about composition and color theory and mixing, but also just mess around. You know, just do it now. Like, what's wrong with that? You know, what's wrong with right now? There's no better time. Yeah.
No, I absolutely love that. How can people follow you? Where can they see some of your projects? Obviously, they're going to be in the show notes as well, but where can people follow and get to see more of your work and all the different projects that you've done?
Yeah, I am at Mojo's Work, MOJOSWORK, on pretty much everything. So if you don't find me, like for instance, I'm not on TikTok because I tried it for 30 seconds. I said, you know what? I think I've reached an age where these things are too far for me now. And it's like, I'm ride or die. So with Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, like that's it. Like that's the end for me. Mojoswork.com also, no new social media. So once these things die, so too will I.
That was very poetic. How did the name Mojo's Work come about?
So getting back to the very first thing we talked about, my last name, Madrinsky, very hard to pronounce when you have a silent Z in the middle of your name. You know you're Polish with the silent Z in the middle of your name. In high school, I had a friend who called me Mojo because he was a big fan of Duke basketball. And at the time, there was a guy who played, his name was Wojciechowski, and they called him Wojo.
Woj.
Yeah, Woj. So I was Mojo and Moj. And it just sort of stuck. And again, I was like, I needed something. Like I see everybody like it stinks being a designer with like such a ridiculous name because, you know, BillSmith.com is so easy to find and so easy to spell. I'm sorry. I can never have ScottMadrinsky.com. So I needed something that somebody could at least be able to spell and not guess where this Z was. Is it before the R? Is it after the Y? It's somewhere in there. I don't know. So it was just like, all right, well, this is my work. So it's Mojo's Work.
I love it. No, that's fantastic. Dude, thank you so much for being on. It's definitely a treat for me to be able to chat with you after all these years, just because I actually have some of Scott's work. He actually made me and sent me, God, many moons ago, and I still have it in my office. I'll make sure to post it during the week of the episode so you can see it, because he made me one of a sandwich. I'm looking at it right now where it says sandwiches are greater than tacos, which I believe, even though I do love a good taco, but I love it. It's like still framed in my office. It will always be in my office unless I ever open a store or some kind of sandwich museum, then it'll be part of that. But definitely great to have you. Thank you so much for Scott for being on. Definitely make sure to check out his work. If you're into Ninja Turtles, definitely spread the word. Check out his cards. I think you'll definitely love him. It's amazing work what he does. The one thing that I appreciate is, you know, exactly what he said. When you have a love for something and people can see it, and they can see it with all the different projects that he always does and works on. And that's one of the things that I value and I appreciate so much that Scott does, because, you know, people see those things and appreciate those things. And even more so, he does it because he loves it and he appreciates it. And I think that's the most important thing. If you enjoy the podcast, make sure to subscribe, listen, and tell your friends. Want to support me? Check out Deli Fresh Threads. Buy some sandwich shirts, by all means, or enamel pins or stickers or whatever. But keep eating. Thank you so much. Till next time, keep eating sandwiches and follow your passion. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Biggie.